Did you get a rainstorm last night?
Oh, my goodness. The thunder, I thought, was going to blow the house up.
Now, you're in Snowmass.
I'm actually right across from Woody Creek in Brush Creek.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it was, I mean, my poor dogs were scared to death.
Wow. Now, did you ever write a story about dogs being scared by lightning and thunder?
No, I actually never did, but it's a good idea.
Huh.
They're always scared, especially when the fireworks go off.
Well,
they freak out.
I know. You know, I wonder what it is. I guess I could see that. You know, it's kind of a scary thing inherently.
It's a very scary thing. I don't know why, but yeah, they just, they don't like it. And my little Kip, the one we're going to talk about today, he's actually my daughter's dog, but he gets so freaked out when we go up to the bells and they bomb that he will actually run down the hill. He just freaks out. And I think that was because her husband used to own a horseback riding operation. And I think, you know, from when the guys used to go up shooting in the backcountry, I think that really scared him.
Oh, how about that? How old is Kip?
Kip is 3, and my other dog, Ranger, is 5.
Okay. Now, you haven't written about Ranger.
I have not written about Ranger.
I've
actually written several stories, but I haven't published them.
Oh, okay. Huh. But Kip is already a star.
Kip is already a star, yes.
Well, your book published last year called Adventures of Kip in Aspen and Snowmass, rather sedate adventures, I would say, compared to the ones that Fraser was involved with. Is that because he's still a youngin'?
It is. And, you know, we wanted to go a different route and sort of just take people for a little travelogue around Aspen and Snowmass. So, yeah, he's definitely not the rescue dog that Fraser was. But, you know, he might grow into one. You never know.
Okay. Now, in true life, in real life, Fraser was a rescue dog, wasn't he?
He was. He wasn't a trained rescue dog, but he did go on several little adventures and had a lot of calls from neighbors and like telling me what he had done. So, yes, I considered him a rescue dog.
Okay.
And on the other hand, too, there were several children over those years that he lived, 14 years, that had been actually terrorized by a dog, had been bitten in the face. And they would come to us because we were doing pet therapy at the hospital. I don't know how they found out about us, but we would come over and just sit with them for a day and, you know, show them that, you know, if you don't go up to a dog, and, you know, these were kids that probably just went up and petted a dog when the dog wasn't ready for it, that the dog could actually be really nice. So Fraser would hang out with them and get them kind of comfortable again.
Do you see those same kind of empathetic qualities in Kip that Fraser displayed?
You know, Kip is definitely a herding dog, so he's a little more aggressive. And I think that Ranger is definitely more that kind of dog. He wouldn't hurt a fly. And I'm not saying that Kip would, but, you know, I haven't been in those situations yet to know. But he has come to school, and so the kids all, you know, at least the Country Day School know him.
Okay.
And he's very gentle with them.
Uh-huh.
But his nature is very protective, so I haven't tested that one out yet.
So I guess that will manifest a little differently story-wise than
yes.
Fraser. Interesting.
Yes, exactly. They're very different beings, different breeds.
Kip is Australian Shepherd? You said he's a herding?
He is, purebred. He's what they call a blue merle.
So he's kind of high-strung.
A little bit, although he's very mellow. He loves to be loved. I mean, he just loves to cuddle up, and yes, he's a lover.
Okay. Well, as I said, this one, The Adventures of Kip in Aspen and Snowmass, rather sedate. You're taking a tour of Aspen and Snowmass to all the dog-friendly places around town, the Wheeler Opera House. I didn't know that the Little Nell allowed dogs in the lobby.
Yes. Yes, they do. In fact, we did a book signing there last year, which was really fun. We probably had about 60 kids. And Kip was there, and Ranger stopped by later, and the kids were thrilled because the Nell served up their delicious hot chocolate. But yeah, dogs are allowed in the lobby.
How about that?
Yeah. Now, I know it's pretty cute, and they do, and that's really true. They do have a pet menu.
How about that? I didn't know. Now, I, you know, Aspen's famous for being dog friendly, no doubt about that. So it's interesting to see some of the places for, I would think, for a newcomer to the Valley, to see the places where dogs are allowed.
Yeah, and they're really happy. There are a lot of hotels that allow dogs in them, and I think they can find that on the website. But yeah, it's a very dog-friendly town, and we get stopped all the time where people really miss their dogs at home, and then they have to get a little pet from our dog, so it's pretty cute.
Do you think if Frazier had lived in, Glenwood Springs or Denver or New York City, that the books about Frazier might have been not as popular?
I never would have written them if we had lived there, because he wouldn't have had those kind of adventures.
Okay.
I mean, the true story is that my husband was on Mountain Rescue, and he was on Ski Patrol. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, all the stories kept coming to me, and then our own family had many adventures. I was the one who was actually caught in the avalanche. So, and my husband and I were up on the backside of the mountain doing a hut trip. And same thing like the Star Mountain book is where the blizzard came in and we literally couldn't see a foot ahead of us. So I kind of would weave those stories in. And if I lived in Denver, unless I was coming up to the mountains quite often, I just don't think that, you know, would have had the topics to write about.
And do you think having been set in Aspen was helpful to the popularity of the series?
I think so, yeah, because we were able to really work on going into all the different bookstores and the schools, and anytime there was an event, you know, we would talk to kids from out of town about safety issues, and just, you know, they got to meet the dog, which was really cool. So often, you know, you see a little children's story and you'll hear about it, but you won't actually get to meet the real character. And Frazier was, you know, with me for all these book signings, and we'd bring the backpack and we'd talk to the kids about, you know, the it's called the Ice Picks, the little picks for life, where in the Maroon Bells book, when Courtney falls through the ice, she has them in her sleeves of her coat, and she uses them. They're spring-loaded to not go further into the water. So, you know, those are things we show the kids, and usually from the city, even in Aspen, they've never seen those before.
Huh.
So, you know, we pull things out of the backpack and kind of show kids how things work.
Okay. Now, you have for many years done readings in local schools, and I gather also around the country and around the world, too. Do you still do that?
I do. You know, whenever there's an opportunity, I go. Oftentimes, you know, school boards or, you know, PTAs will send me to a different town. Oftentimes, there'll be a family member who will be in Aspen, and they'll see me, and they'll come up and say, oh, you know, can you come to California, Dana Point, or wherever, and do a whole assembly? And sure, I do that.
Huh. As you're writing the books, Jill Shealy, do you test out the stories on live kid audiences?
I do. That's a really good question. I absolutely do, because, for instance, when I did the Snowmass Frazier book, that was my very first one, and I probably read it to about four classes just to make sure it wasn't too scary and that the kids liked it and the parents liked it. And in that particular book, it was really interesting. One mother was at the library. She had a very interesting comment. What happens is Courtney gets caught in an avalanche, and Frazier is tied up below and gets off of his rope and comes up and saves her. But the mother was really quite interested, and she said, well, I don't understand how the dog got loose. Well, she didn't have a dog. If Frazier had sensed that Courtney was in trouble, he would have chewed right through that rope. So we changed the story and actually had the rope around his neck chewed off, so it looked like he had, you know, chewed it.
Okay.
So we definitely use comments, and the kids at the elementary school in the Star Mountain book, at the very end, we had a little, they're all back at the cabin, safe and sound, after surviving this huge blizzard, and they're outside building a snowman. And this little boy said, oh, could that be a snow dog? So we changed it to a snow dog. So, yeah, we get comments all the time before the book gets published just to see if there's any tweaking we can do.
Well, the Fraser books, and to some extent the Kip book, at least the first one here, maybe to a lesser extent, but are marked by outdoor discovery. They're always set in the outdoors, which I suppose is kind of the point, isn't it, for you?
Yes, because, I mean, we kind of live our lives outside.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what you want to pass on to the kids, especially the ones who maybe don't.
Exactly.
Also, the books are marked by, there's always a slightly scary situation, but something that always can be solved or faced with the help of others.
Right.
And lessons in safety. There's always a safety lesson in there, too, isn't there?
Yes, except for, of course, now in the Green Book, which is the Aspen Mountain one, where they find Maggie in the mine shaft. We had done all these lessons, and we decided, well, you know, I think that this one will just add a chocolate chip cookie recipe at the end.
That's great. When did you first start writing, Jill?
Well, I did Christmas in Aspen in 1980. Published that in 1980. Huh. So I've been at it for a long time.
Uh-huh. And the Fraser dogs came about in the late 80s?
Well, I would say Courtney was probably 8 years old, and I had someone at the bookstore say to me that there were no children's books. So I actually signed up for a children's book class at CMC, which got canceled, and the teacher ended up mentoring me. So that was probably when Courtney was about 8, and she's 31 now.
Okay. So it's getting to the point where a second generation now is coming up on those stories.
Right, and that's why we did Kip, because now, of course, Kip is Courtney's dog.
Right.
And he goes on the adventures with her. Huh. And she's very sporty, too.
Did you have any idea, Jill, that it would be this successful?
I had no idea.
Huh. You kind of hoped, I'm sure.
Oh, of course. But well, yes, very, very pleasantly surprised.
Huh. I read a 2004 interview that Stuart Oxenhorn did with you. And in that, he said that you had sold upwards of 50,000 copies. Now, that was 13 years ago. So you've done very well with these, haven't you?
We have. It's been amazing. Well, and that includes all the books, of course. I have,
right,
besides the Christmas in Aspen book, I also have 2 cookbooks as well. And then after sort of the Fraser series, we decided to go ahead and do Fraser's memoir and The Blue Bottle, which is a story that takes Courtney and Fraser and Maggie on an adventure into the Caribbean, where we spent many years sailing. And so that's sort of an offshoot. It's more of a young adult novel for the kids who had gone through the whole Fraser series but still wanted to know what Fraser was up to.
Okay.
So, this is like my 12th book, so it's a lot of books.
You say that The Blue Bottle was a young adult book, so it's not a children's book. Did that make it a different challenge for you, writing-wise?
It actually was really fun. I had been waiting to do a book like this for a long, long, long time, and yes, it was challenging because I didn't really know how to do it, but I just jumped into it and kind of figured it out. It's been really fun, and I've been enjoying going down to the Caribbean and selling that book. And, you know, I teach classes down there as well. So that's, yeah, definitely different, but definitely fun.
You say teach classes. So what is it that you teach young upcoming writers about?
So what I do is I go into schools and or classrooms, and I just talk to them about the process of writing. You know, they get so intimidated about writing, which is why I also hold a third and fourth grade writing contest every year. But I just try to explain to them that, you know, you don't have to come up with an elaborate plan. Basically, it's just one simple idea. And then I do this kind of cool little, I call it the simple sunshine story. And I actually show them the rays of the sun. In the very middle, which is where the sun is the idea, just one little idea. And I will actually show them from my stories how, you know, it's just, you know, here's a dog, Fraser. And then, you know, we have Courtney, and we have Taylor, and we have Katie, and we have skiing, and we have, you know, going up to lunch. And so we tie all these, like, little tiny threads of ideas together, and the next thing you know, we have a story. And the kids get to actually work on that after I leave. And so, you know, I always say if I inspire one or two kids, I've done my job.
Now, do you do classes or workshops for adults, too, who want to write?
I don't really do adults. I haven't really had that opportunity because I think adults all have that within them. And I think there's so many other classes that are offered from other adults. And because I'm a children's book author primarily, I feel that that's kind of my, you know, topic in life. But I think adults are definitely wanting to write at, you know, certain ages, especially after they retire.
Okay. Well, you obviously have that within you, but I wonder how you uncovered that. I mean, I know you've been in Aspen a long time, and you know, at least when you first hit Aspen, or when anybody first hits Aspen, they have to do what they have to do just to stay there. So if that means three or four jobs, they do three or four jobs. But somewhere along the line, you realized you could write. How did that happen for you?
Well, I had always loved writing. That was always my, you know, favorite subject in school was, you know, English and literature. And I took a creative writing class in high school, and one of which I was not graded on. And it was just very exciting to get out my journal every day. So I've been a person who journals almost every day, which is what I also encourage the kids to do. And so for me, it was one of those things where one day we were hiking in the mountains and we were talking about Christmas and how cool Christmas is. And we just decided, my friend and I would run around to all the different homes in Aspen and photograph the Christmas trees. And so we did, and we, you know, photographed the Christmas carolers. This is back in the 70s. And we went to do a slideshow for our husbands in the spring, and there were beautiful photographs, just tons and tons of them. And, I mean, my husband looked at me and said, well, you know how expensive four-color photographs are to publish, because we were both in the advertising business at the time. And I knew I couldn't really afford it. I tried to get a loan, and it didn't work. So I went back to all the families that I had photographed their trees and interviewed them and found out about how they celebrated Christmas differently. And that kind of flowed into different, you know, how did Kringle come about? How did presents come about? How did lights on the Christmas tree come about? So I did a lot of research, and then I went into the Country Day School and had a contest for stories and poems. And then John Denver worked right across from us and was a friend and let me use his song, Alfie the Christmas Tree. And I got other poems from other adults and stories. And the third section was all recipes. So it kind of just took a life of its own on. And it was back in the days where you actually cut and pasted a book, which is another thing I show the kids, how the technology has changed from sitting on a computer. We didn't even have computers then. I did it all by a typewriter. And then we cut and pasted these boards. You remember those days with the blue lines?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was very tedious, but actually really, really fun. And so I was able to borrow the money from my brother, who is a big, you know, he's a big financial guy. And he had taken a year off and was betting on the racetracks. So he had money to loan me. And so I was able to publish that book. And that led to the cookbooks, which led to the kids' books. Huh. So it's been a really fun career.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, you know, a big part of a children's book, of course, is the art. And I know you've had several artists illustrating your books, starting with your mother.
Exactly. That has been the biggest honor was when I went back to do the Christmas book, my parents lived in Evanston, Illinois. And my dad was also in advertising. And the gentleman down the road had written and published his own book. So we went down and talked to him. And then we went into Chicago and met with a broker who explained exactly what we needed to do. My dad understood part of it. I understood the other part. And my mom, the illustrator, understood her part. So the three of us just sort of collaborated on this whole project. And I was there for about a week, and I would tell my mom what to draw, and then I would go down to Lake Michigan and write some more. So that was really fun, and we got it done, and she's just a fabulous illustrator. She actually went to Art Institute back in the 40s, which is pretty amazing. And she's 95 now and still alive. Huh. And then she also illustrated my two cookbooks.
Wow. And then Tammy Lane did a few of your Fraser books.
Yes, Tammy did all the Fraser books until I got to the memoir. And that was illustrated by a pretty famous cartoonist in California who actually I never met. We did it all over the phone. And then Tanya Richards, another woman that I never met from Ohio who was a sailor, she and I got together and did The Blue Bottle. And then this book was a friend that I know from British Columbia, Tanya Richards, and we had, you know, met many, many, many times and had always talked about doing a book together. And so she did the Kip book. So, and we had a great time working on that. She was actually in Florence with her children doing restoration work and was able to, you know, put things down and get that Kip book done overseas. So that was another interesting challenge.
Huh, and those are all watercolors, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And she just did a great job. I would just send her photos. She had only been to Aspen one time, and she, interestingly, had owned a bookstore. So that was fun to work with her. And, yeah, I just sent her photos, and she, you know, really got the flavor.
Well, Jill, I'm talking to you because next week, Wednesday to be exact, you are giving a reading and presumably a book signing at the Carbondale Library along with a couple of other authors. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that before I let you go.
Sure. So it's at the Carbondale Library. It's 6 p.m. And two friends of mine, Linda Flynn and Corey Kiernan, we all took a class together, interestingly enough, a couple of years ago from Michael Conniff and Rick Johnston at Colorado Mountain College. And it was publishing in this new century. I've always published my books the traditional way. And with Kip, I knew I needed to do it the new way. I couldn't, you know, publish 1,000 books at a time. So we took this class. And they were budding authors. And after the class was over, the three of us got together quite often and shared our work and worked on proofing and editing and the whole process. So it was really fun for me to see them publish their first book. And so we, the three of us, have decided we'll get together and talk about our processes, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's really great. Jill Shealy, thank you so much for joining Express Yourself today.
Thank you, Luke.